Welcome back to the Expert Witness Playbook. I'm Dr. Brian Woodruff, pediatric neurologist and expert witness, and I am excited today. My guest is Ashish Arun, founder and CEO of Xlytem, an AI-enabled platform where attorneys can find, retain, and research expert witnesses, including running opposition research on the experts across the aisle. He's also the principal owner of Expert Witness Profiler, which has spent over a decade providing background intelligence on testifying experts, digging up the challenge histories, prior testimony, and credibility issues that can make or break a Daubert motion. Ashish is a lawyer by training who launched his first legal research company while still in law school, and he's been building at the intersection of litigation and technology ever since. He also hosts his own podcast, On the Stand, where he interviews expert witnesses about their craft. Few people have looked at more expert witness track records than Ashish, and today we're talking about how better access to court information and AI are transforming the way attorneys vet opposing experts and what that means for the experts themselves. Ashish, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Brian. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I've had a chance to listen to a lot of your podcasts. You are a veteran at this, so I'm just a mere mortal. So I appreciate you being on the other side and humoring me today. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed listening and being a fan. So I think we should just dive in. You started in legal research while you were still in law school. How did that happen? What was the first client? Kind of walk me through kind of the start of all of this.
So I was studying law, and that is how my now business partner in the Expert Witness Profiler business, Miles Levin, he found a bunch of us students, and we used to do research for his product, the Daubert Tracker. So that is how I got introduced as a law student to the world of expert witness research. And around the time when law school was getting over, Miles was setting up Expert Witness Profiler with the founder of JurisPro, Jim Robinson. And that is when, around the same time, I was finishing law school and we decided that, it looks like, legal research and especially expert witness research is going to be an interesting field. It's worth checking out. I've already spent a few years doing this. So around that time, I set up a legal research company. We called it Offshore Research Partners. And we were doing all the research work for Expert Witness Profiler as a vendor. And we did that for a few years. We did that for a couple of other clients. And after a few years, Jim left. He wanted to focus on JurisPro. And that is when I came in his place, and Miles and I, we continued running Expert Witness Profiler together.
Awesome. So for listeners who don't know, what exactly is Expert Witness Profiler? And what does the Xlytem, I know there's kind of a couple different parts to this. There's some different pieces to the puzzle. What does that add to it?
So Miles was doing, Daubert Tracker as a product was looking at court opinions where judges were ruling on Daubert motions. But attorneys were looking at, still find it useful, but when an attorney is looking at a specific expert, they wanted the whole background on that particular expert. And a lot of that would not make it to a judicial ruling. So the idea of the Expert Witness Profiler was that we take the name of a particular expert and from there we start the research. So we get into court records, we get into not only rulings, but also briefs, motions, pleadings, docket entries, and find every court document that references a particular expert. And then our legal research team that comprises of lawyers and data analysts, they would then categorize every document as to whether this expert was involved as an expert in this case or were they just referenced. And if they were an expert, then was there a challenge to the testimony or any language that suggests some kind of criticism, some kind of credibility assessment that can allow an attorney to figure out if the expert is a good fit for the case, or is there a way for them to try and discredit the expert at a deposition or during trial. So that was the whole premise of Expert Witness Profiler. We begin the research with one expert and we compile everything we can find on that expert and present it to the attorney in the form of a PDF report that they can then review and decide how they want to use that information.
Now, I could see as an most people, I mean, we have lawyers, we have experts, we have consultants on here that are listening. I could see somebody maybe asking for their own expert witness profile. Yeah. I could see that because then you know what's there and what other people can see. Is that something that people do? I kind of just thought of that as sort of like, hey, why not know what the opposition has that may come up at a deposition or trial?
Yeah, it's interesting that you asked that because that was the initial thought on which Jim actually decided, he came up with this idea that there was a presumption that attorneys usually have access to all these legal research tools. So they would usually know what is out there on an expert. But if an expert can learn this, then they can be prepared to answer those difficult questions during the next cross. So the product was actually designed around the idea that experts will use it to learn what court records are out there, what have judges said about them in court records. A lot of times experts don't even know when their testimony gets challenged, and we have seen that as well. So a lot of experts have ordered these reports on themselves, and they are very surprised at what we find most of the times.
Is there a if an attorney is ordering one, is that a different price than if an expert wants something of themselves? Is there sort of a discount or something to get something on yourself?
So usually we keep running promotions around the year, around like President's Day and Independence Day, that sort of stuff. So we usually don't have like an ongoing discount. It's the same price for everyone. But yeah, okay. I mean, at times when experts come to us, they talk to us, we are happy to give them a 20-25% discount if they are ordering the report on themselves.
Awesome. You say some people, I've heard of that where there have been Daubert challenges that people didn't even know about.
Yeah.
Hopefully not successful Daubert challenges that they didn't know about, but even the fact that there are Daubert challenges, what's something that somebody has dug up about themselves that they were like super surprised about? Is there anything sort of like, oh my, where they nearly fell out of their chair?
In the initial months of launching Expert Witness Profiler, we realized the power of the product because an expert ordered one of these on himself. And when the results came back, he was not very pleased because it turns out we had 18 to 20 cases that he had no clue about. So we shared the court records with him. And to his surprise, the same attorney had designated him as an expert without his permission in almost 18 cases.
Wow.
So that was something that expert found. And a lot of times experts keep getting surprised like, oh, I didn't know that I was challenged in that case. There was a Daubert motion. And most Daubert motions, they get denied. And that information in itself, I think, is marketing gold for an expert. Because if you have been challenged under Daubert and the court saying, oh, no, this particular person is qualified, they have a sound methodology, that's a part of the public record. And nobody's stopping you from using that on your website, on your LinkedIn, as a quote directly from the judge. So that's another use case we see and suggest to experts that they should get these on themselves, see what courts have said about them, be better prepared for the next depo, and also use it to their advantage in showing their credibility.
So some people may have one successful Daubert challenge against them, but they may have 60 unsuccessful. And so you've seen people use that. Yeah. Since we're on that topic, I mean, Daubert challenges come up a lot. And and everybody's trying to, you know, make sure their opinions have solid methodology and everything. What have you helped people with, or given maybe some advice if they have a successful Daubert challenge, how to get back out of that and how to repair that, or at least explain it?
Yeah, I'd actually once written a detailed article on that. I'll probably share a link with you. You can add it to the show notes. But we basically tell experts that, you know, you have to separate yourself from that case situation. So first of all, you have to understand why were you excluded. Like, were you excluded because you picked up a case that was a little outside your lane? And that happens a lot. So, like, somebody who's a, like, let's take an example from engineering, or like somebody who's a mechanical engineer may pick something that's not related to mechanics per se, but they may take something which involves electrical circuits or something, and they'll think that, okay, I may be able to explain this because it looks lucrative. Like a several $1,000 retainers on your way, there's an attorney who's looking to retain you, and it may feel difficult to say no, but that causes a lot of exclusions where qualified experts pick something that is slightly outside their lane. So if that is why you were excluded, we would recommend that you be very honest about it and stop taking similar cases, so that even if something like that comes up, you are able to explain that, okay, yeah, that case was slightly outside, like that is what the judge felt, that it was slightly outside the area of my expertise, if that is what has happened. But this case here, it's not that case. It's a different set of facts. And these are, you know, like, I'm like, my qualifications match, and I'm 100% sure that this is well within the area of my expertise. So that is one. A lot of times we see that methodology becomes a part of the problem. And some experts get, I mean, lazy at times. They don't explain their methodology, or they overreach, where there's a zeal to reach the same conclusion that your client, your attorney client is hoping for you to get. And that is, again, where a lot of experts get excluded. So, I mean, once you have gotten excluded as an expert witness, you really need to dissect that exclusion and look at the motions that were filed, the memorandum, the arguments that the opposing side made. Don't look at only the ruling. Get all the court records. Ask your retaining attorney to get them to you, or like order one of our profiles if you want, or just go to the court if the court's online and get those documents, and then try and figure out why did that exclusion happen. So, and then prepare your answers, because once you've been excluded, they will ask you about that again and again.
Well, I think that's going to be important for people that are listening. I mean, because knowledge is power, and when you know about it, I know in my retention agreement, I have something wording in there that basically says, if somebody is going to challenge my opinions or something, that you have to let me know. Because I've heard of times where they don't, and you know, the attorney will go and try to, I don't know the exact terminology, but try to defend your opinions or methodology, and they fail, yeah. And they never included you in the process. And yeah. And so, I mean, that would be, if that comes up, then that's a pretty easy answer, that, you know, I wasn't even included in the process. Yeah. And therefore I had no ability to defend myself. It was a process that didn't even include me. So I think it's good. I mean, it tells people, number one, to figure out if they've had, because even though you think you haven't had a challenge that was successful, you may not know. And, yeah. And so getting that knowledge do people have to get the full profile to get that knowledge? I know there's different, there are different, levels of knowledge that they can purchase from your platform?
Yeah, there is there's something called the expert challenge study where we only include cases where you've been challenged. So you can, that's a lower priced report, and you can choose to get that if that is all you're interested in. We definitely suggest experts to get the whole thing because you also want to know what else is out there about you. Like, for example, somebody ordered a report. We also verify licenses and certifications. And one expert found out that his license had just expired a few days ago when he ordered the report. And you were like, oh, wow, I had totally forgotten about it. So, I mean, I should be renewing this. So, because the report, you know, like it includes everything that is out there, whatever we can find, whatever we can confirm, and then it cites to the sources. So we usually recommend that experts should get everything, but if if they don't want to spend on the full report, then yeah. I mean, if you're just interested in the challenges, we have an expert challenge study that one can get.
Yeah, let's shift gears just a little bit. You probably get into, you know, how experts get their name out there, because there's sort of a double-edged sword. You know, you will get questioned on everything that you do, from website to directory listing, whatever it is, you're going to get questioned on it. But if nobody knows how to get in touch with you, you're never going to get a case. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. Tell me a little bit about, number one, what you're finding out there that I think there's a couple questions here. One is going to be like, what are the best ways? But I think a better question to start with maybe is, what do you find to be the most vulnerable things that cause the highest risks to people? Maybe discuss some of that.
So, see, I mean, I agree with you that a lot of, like, it can look like a double-edged sword, where if you don't put your name out there, how are they going to find you? And on the other hand, you will be questioned about it. But where I kind of differentiate this stand from many people is, I mean, getting asked about it is perfectly fine. A lot of times, and now this is something that used to be the old school approach maybe 20 years ago, where, you know, like, an expert witness advertising or being on an online directory was really frowned upon. But when I started out in the late 2000s, there used to be a very strong school of thought that experts should not write articles, they should not blog, they should not put out content on social media. But today, if you see, LinkedIn is pretty much a top source for experts to connect with attorneys and get assignments. Maybe not so much for the testifying experts, but a lot of experts, including medical doctors and a lot of legal nursing consultants who do pre-litigation work, they are finding a lot of success by connecting with attorneys on social media, educating them through their content, and establishing their names as reliable experts who really know their stuff. So I believe that as long as you can answer it with confidence that, okay, I need to get my name out there if they don't know me, like plaintiffs and defendants, they both have the right to a fair trial and they can't do that without an expert witness. So why make it harder for attorneys to find me if I can be of help? That's one. And then some straightforward answers where, you know, your time is what you are billing for. You are not selling your opinion. It's not that the party that retains you gets to purchase and dictate what you are saying. Your opinions are your own. So that way, that whole hired gun narrative can be taken out of the equation, even if you have a website or you are on expert directories. So my take is, go ahead. You should be on these platforms. You should have a website. You should put out content on social media. But don't say anything on any of these platforms that you wouldn't say in court. So that is the fine line. Like, don't say things like, and I have seen experts saying this on their websites, that we will help you win cases, or, you know, like providing reliable and winning testimony for plaintiff attorneys since 2008. So that kind of stuff that shows a bias towards the site, or shows that you are willing to some extent to bend your opinions to suit your client's narrative, like that kind of stuff can put you in trouble.
Yeah, I've said multiple times on prior podcasts that experts don't win or lose cases.
Yeah,
you know, for the most part, experts are there to explain things to the court and to the jury, and in ways that everybody can understand. Because you're an expert, you need to sort of, you know, simplify it, lack of a better term, so that people that aren't immersed in this all day, every day can understand it. So within, you know, we talked a little bit about LinkedIn and websites. I think you hit on directories. I assume all of those go into a profile. Is it just that you guys list those, or you may list them and say what the vulnerabilities are? How deep do you research all of these various marketing techniques and areas?
So now with the new platform that we are building, so the legacy expert witness profile is a PDF, as you have also seen on the website, and if you've ordered one, you would have seen that. So it's a PDF that lists things. So in the current form, it tells you, okay, this is the expert witness, this is their LinkedIn, this is their Facebook, this is their Twitter, these are the five directories they are on, so on and so forth. Now we are, again, with the advent of technology, we have much better data analytics tool and AI tools that can help us start comparing resumes. Like, to give you an example, we were last week looking at an expert's CV, and the person was excluded because she was still studying a course, like she had not completed her PhD. And we found two versions of the CV, where in one version, the expected date of completion was 2025, and then in the other one, it changed to 2026. And this was a case where the expert was excluded, and because the degree had not been completed, and then the judge looked into things like, was the topic she was testifying on even included in the PhD and the course material that she was taking? And because of all this, they disqualified her on the grounds of exclusion. And the moment that expert was excluded, within a few weeks, the case settled. The docket showed that the case settled. There were no further proceedings in that case. So, I mean, it's anyone's guess as to why I think it was the defendant's expert. So why the defense chose to settle once their expert was knocked out.
Yeah, that can certainly, when you don't have an expert to defend your case, that becomes a big challenge.
So with these new tools, we are able to catch these discrepancies, and actually we highlight these. So we have sections like, oh, things you should know. These are 10 things you should be looking at based on everything that we have found. And all of that is now possible in the new platform-based version. We are calling it Expert Atlas. So it's like, we're testing it with a few customers right now. It's not out for general availability, but it will be soon.
Yeah, it seems like you guys just keep adding more and more on. And do you find that you have more defense or more plaintiff? Kind of who seems to come and request your services more?
I mean, luckily, it's pretty much been like how experts like it, 50-50. So yeah. It's very balanced.
Yeah, there's not a bias, like the defense, for another.
Yeah, the defense, like we see usage from both sides. See, we are not doing any consulting work. So our products are basically, it's a legal research tool or a general research tool where you are researching the background of an expert. So we don't care if it's the plaintiff who's looking for defense experts and vice versa, or the experts are free to order reports on themselves as well. Like many companies don't only want to work with attorneys. Like we don't It's a tool. It's a tool available to anyone and everyone who wants to use it. We see a lot of, like individual plaintiff firms would use it, defense firms as well, but we also work with insurance companies.
Oh, okay.
So their claims departments would run these background reports on the plaintiff expert they are seeing or the experts they are looking to vet for their own retention.
So obviously you guys, with AI coming on the scene, you know, AI has probably been helping you. I'm fascinated by AI and fascinated by how AI is going to change kind of the expert witness world and how it probably already has. I see in the news about people being challenged related to using AI for various things. And in certain courts, you know, people have to disclose and different things. What, you know, this is the million-dollar question. Like, where do you see AI? I'm not even going to go far out because it seems like AI has been changed things in an insane pace. Like 1, 3, 5 years from now, where do you see AI changing, you know, what attorneys do, what, you know, what more likely what experts do? Give me a little idea of what you see when you're looking at it.
So when we are looking at how AI is impacting expert witness work, so right now we are in a place where everyone's trying to find their feet, and which is where some attorneys are getting burnt because they are using AI when they don't really know how to use it. So they are asking bad questions, and then the AI is hallucinating and making up answers, and they are including them in their briefs and pleadings, and then judges are catching them and sanctioning them. Some experts are unfortunately doing the same, and they have been caught and sanctioned in courts. And courts are becoming more and more aware that experts and attorneys are all using AI. So the standard is getting a little strict. Like recently in a case, the opposing party asked the expert to disclose all the AI prompts that the expert had used in reaching their his report. And then the retaining party argued that it was privileged expert work, and but they had not removed that. There's some discovery law that says that okay, the parties can agree on removing something from the scope of discovery. So they had not removed the AI prompts, and the judge held that the prompts that you use as an expert witness to use AI to reach your opinion is a part of your methodology, and the other party has the right to request that in discovery. So you have to disclose.
I was reading about that. I think that was in New York, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It was and then other things that are happening is recently, I think yesterday I saw one of the like a plaintiff's attorney on LinkedIn who posted, I think it was one of those 3M cases or like one of those mass tort cases where the expert had asked questions to the AI like how, you know, like this is the issue at in this case. How do I establish my expertise as an expert witness on this topic? So now when you ask these questions and then they become discovered, then, I mean, I don't know what to say.
It makes you look like you're not the expert. Yeah, that is rather unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and the problem is, you know, I mean, for all you know, that person may be an expert on the case, but he was naive enough to just ask these questions. And then when it comes out, you end up looking like, you know, like you end up in a bad space.
Yeah. So obviously, kind of the first level that people are doing is they're querying, you know, in the old days, it was... Yeah. Optical character recognition, and then search a word. Like you wanted to know, like, oh, yeah. I want to make sure I found all the MRIs. So what's the most common word in a brain MRI that you might not pop up anywhere else? I'd say diffusion, like diffusion weighted imaging. So you type in diffusion and then it would, and so that's been around forever. And then the next level is sort of trying to create a chronology. And then, use your imagination. Tell me where you think this is going. Like, what do you think is going to happen in the next couple of years beyond chronology, beyond, maybe some fixing grammar and those sorts of things.
So I don't think that we'll get to a place where an attorney would just upload the medical records and say, hey, did the doctor breach the standard of care? Give me a yes or no and explain yourself. I mean, technically, you can still ask that question, but that's not something that you would want to rely upon or use in court because no court's going to accept that. So I don't see that happening. Maybe that will happen with the assistance and the supervision of an expert witness. So, like today, there are tools where you can upload medical records and it builds a chronology. But that tool today doesn't know what the standard of care is for that particular procedure for which you are claiming malpractice in the state, in the time when that procedure happened, when the event happened that led to the lawsuit. So that the tool is not aware of that. So which is where the experts are experts will be needed. Experts will continue to be needed. But yeah, I think it will empower the smart experts who would know how to use these tools to the best of their advantage in collaboration with attorneys, being aware of what the laws are, what is allowed, what is not allowed. And the ones who will be successful are the ones who will verify everything. So that
Yes.
the opinion is still theirs. It's not the AI's.
It sort of goes back to depends on what generation you're from. When I was growing up, it was Cliff Notes. Maybe you're a little younger and you got Spark Notes. Those seem to be the new ones. But it kind of, maybe you read the Cliff Notes for the chapter first, but then you go through and you read the whole chapter, and make sure you really know all the details, but it gives you sort of a roadmap. I've heard same thing about sort of deposition summaries where you can get a deposition summary. There are companies out there that'll give you sort of the big headlines. But I still believe, and I don't think this will ever change, that yet as an expert, you need to have command of that whole record. You need to understand it. You need so maybe chronologies and summaries and different things will help you sort of get your head around the big picture, but you've got to get down to the granular data. I think that's just so important, and I've said that over and over again that sometimes people talk about trust but verify. I would say don't trust and
Don't
verify.
trust and double
Don't
verify.
trust and verify. That's sort of my raising teenagers. Trust but verify. AI and legal research, don't trust but verify. That could be probably a whole nother podcast with somebody. So as we're getting near the end of sort of the time that we have, what's the most memorable finding you've ever surfaced on an expert? Please, no names.
No, obviously no names. I mean, there have been a couple. One expert was, he was in a rush and he ended up copy-pasting the whole expert report from another expert. So they were like, he submitted a 5,000-page report and he had written only 10 of those. So I mean, these kinds of things are very baffling. Obviously, the court spotted that and excluded. We found one expert was, and he was a big name in his industry. He was caught stealing a computer and ended up in prison for a good 15 years for that. And so, I mean, we keep seeing a lot of different oddities, but what we really like finding is when an expert has really contradicted themselves in the current case And we find a deposition transcript where the expert took a very different or an exact opposite position. So that is something that we keep seeing. I unfortunately don't have anything specific there, but that's one of the key use cases of our profile reports. And like, in fact, we have like one of our key testimonials from like one of our oldest customers, that this is the one reason why we get these on every experts we are opposing, because you tell us these five deposition transcripts are available in these old cases. And many a times we find that the expert said something and now they are saying something completely different in my case on the same issue.
Always important. Be honest.
Yeah.
Be honest, be consistent. And if your opinion changes, I mean, things change over the years. You know, there's new data that comes out. A medication for a treatment, you know, I mean, that's how science and medicine works. Things change. But if it's a fundamental physiologic question that you answered one way, that hasn't changed, that's a problem. Treatments change. Even our understanding of physiology and the basic science can change. But, you know, you need to really have an explanation for that. Because what talking to a lot of attorneys is, it's getting easier and easier for them to research experts.
Yeah.
It's easier for them to get depositions, and it's easier for them to use AI to summarize and find a specific line of question. You know, they may have, you know, 50 depositions that you've previously done, which would have taken them months to do, and they put them all into their AI, ask a few prompts, go to bed, and wake up in the morning and have 1,000 hours of what would be previous research accomplished for them. And so I think it just is, it's the same like another teenage thing. You know, when I was a teenager, there weren't cell phones. You know, our parents didn't have, you know, Life 360 and knew where we were at all times. And, you know, I think I would have been a much more careful teenager in the modern era than I was living free range back in the 80s and early 90s.
But that is, I think, like my generation was the last generation that grew up without recording every minute of their life. So like I'm 41 and like throughout college, and otherwise, like we weren't like, it's not that whatever stupid things we were doing in our youth, it was all getting recorded. So I think that was a good thing that, you know, like there's like
completely agree. I've now raised three teenagers, and I think growing up is certainly a lot more complicated in the modern era. Well, where can people find you and Xlytem, and you know, We'll get that information posted up if people are looking at and visually watching this. But for those that aren't, where can people find you?
So my name is Ashish Arun. That's A-S-H-I-S-H-A-R-U-N. That's my social media handle on LinkedIn and everywhere else. And the website is Xlytem, Xlytem.com. If you're an expert witness, come add your information to the platform. It's completely free to join. There are some premium features that you can go for, but there's no cost to add your information to the search engine and make sure that attorneys are able to at least learn about you when they are looking for an expert on Xlytem. And if you want to learn more about the practice management tools that we're building, like we now have some matter management tools, timekeeping, invoicing tools for experts in there as well. So check us out on xlytem.com. It's pretty straightforward and self-explanatory, but if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them personally. My email is Ashish, that's A-S-H-I-S-H, at xlytem.com. That's E-X-L-I-T-E-M.com.
Awesome. Well, Ashish, this has been great getting to meet you, getting to understand your platform and, you know, your experience over the past couple of decades that you've been you have been in this arena. And for those that are listening, thank you. We appreciate it. We always appreciate a comment, a like, a subscribe. If you can, please reach out. You can always reach out to me if you have questions, and would love to hear from you. But until next time, look forward to talking with Ashish with you again. We've got more topics. You'll be back, yeah. I hope. Goodbye, everybody.
Definitely.